Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening out there in Blog Talk Radio land. Mike Dugan joining you from the rainy evening in the New York City area out on Long Island. But we've had a great winter so far. We've only had two really snowstorms. One was November 15th, which was a surprise 6-incher. And then we had one little storm, and we're expecting maybe a little more snow Sunday night into Monday. But what a winter this has been for us so far. We've been lucky. It's been cold, a lot of rain, but it's all good. And with me, as always, tonight is my good friend Mike Galliano, and I saw his pictures on Facebook of him coming home from traveling. And he was in Texas while I was in Nebraska. I had a great time with the brothers and sisters, the Les Lukerts. Show out in Nebraska if you're in that area next year. It's always the first week in February. It's not a bad place to be, but I had a great time. Michael, how are you, my brother?
Michael, I am doing great. Thank you very much. I'm sorry you guys have rain. That has not been my world the last the last few days. Michael, it has not been my world. We got, I think as you may have saw in the pictures or on the news media, I mean, the Seattle area got hit with, like, I don't know, 8 to 12 inches of snow, which is, you know, that's not the end of the world for us, but I think you can see it from there. You can certainly see the end of the world. And we know we were in that for probably less than a day, Mike, flying back from the Winter Fire School in Missouri, such a, you know, again, a wonderful fire conference like the one you were at, the Les Lukerts show. And we got back, and then we headed I would describe it as a fairly treacherous journey across the state of Washington to try to get to Spokane to see KISS live, which was amazing, and we made it in one piece. And then now we're over in the Coeur d'Alene area, which is in northern Idaho, and I'm looking out the window, Michael, and I'm waiting for my little granddaughter to show up. She's going to be here in about an hour, 2 hours, and so if you hear me squeal like I don't know, squeal like something. I won't say a little girl because you get in trouble for that now. If you hear me squeal like a little pig, because my granddaughter has popped up. But Mikey, life is good. I feel like we're bringing the snow everywhere we came. They did not have snow over here. Ann and I were here for about 6 hours, and then all of a sudden they got 2-3 inches of snow. So I think there's a cause and effect there. No, life is good. Mike, I am pumped to talk to our buddies today. We got a couple of just your and my real good friends. I'm real excited about the topic. And as you know, brother, I mean, as well as anybody in the nation, you know, this is a very important topic and one that I know hits home for you very personally.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think this is a great topic and we can do a lot with it. And we have two wonderful guests, and I'm just going to take a minute, if you don't mind, and go over their bios. Bob Carpenter is a 30-year veteran of Miami-Dade Fire Rescue in Florida, where he recently retired as the station captain at Station 21 in the 1st Battalion. He's been in the fire service for almost 40 years and has previously worked for a combination department and also served as a volunteer. He was an officer development lead instructor and a recruit officer in charge and a training officer of the North Operations Division. And with him, of course, is his partner and co-author of the book with another individual, and I will let them explain that to you. But Rick George is a firefighter, was a firefighter in Palm Beach County, Florida, since 92. He's authored chapters in several books and co-authored a book on resiliency. He's been assigned to trucks, engines. He's taught many of the discipline. He retired in 2017 to pursue his passion of training. He also works in a rehab counseling center for first responders struggling with drugs, alcohol, and PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And their partner from Canada can't be with us tonight is David Gillespie, and he's from Peterborough Fire Service, and he is also an adjunct professor at Fleming College up in Canada. So we'd like to reach out to him and say, hey. And besides that, I think we're going to have a great show tonight. So what do you think?
Oh, Mike, you know, I've been excited to see this book drop. I've watched these guys working on this material and watching it develop now for a while. And I can't tell you how highly, I just really think highly of these guys. I've got to watch the process and the, you know, Mike, trying to get anything of substance out to the nation and out to the world is fraught with peril and it's challenging. And there's a thousand things that come up against you. I mean, you know, it's cool. The book is, you know, developing firefighter resiliency. You damn well have to have resiliency to even get something like this to press. You better be resilient. And so I think they probably learned a few things and maybe they'll talk about it, about resiliency, even trying to get the project going. But Mike, as we were talking about, even in the kind of chat room before this, the job has incredible impacts on the men and women who do it. And nobody thinks higher of firefighters than I do, and nobody believes more strongly in the men and women who choose this calling, or a better way to say it, are chosen by this calling. They are a tough bunch and a studly bunch, and a bunch that is, you know, can take a lot of hits and can stand up to a lot of stuff. And I believe it's becoming very clear. It probably has been most of a long, long time, but certainly now it's no longer a hidden thing. The job and the stresses and the images and the strains of this profession definitely are taking their toll. And I think it's increasing with the busyness of life and with just the rapidity and pace of the way life comes at us. And you combine that with all the different things that you have to see and just what the job throws at you. I just think it's a timely topic, Mike. I think it's a needed topic. And I'm so proud of these guys for having the guts and the courage to step up to it and, you know, and feel insecure about, you know, who are we to be doing this and all that stuff you go through. And they fought through it and they combined efforts and they, you know, we got three very different guys who contributed to this book and they're bringing the different perspectives to it. And I think you're going to get to see some of that. And so I guess, as you can tell, Michael, my pulse is up and I'm excited to talk to Bob and Rick. So is that good enough, Mikey?
I think that's great. I think that's great. So, yeah, I think this should be a lot of fun. I mean, I think it's going to be an interesting talk and we're going to get some interesting stuff out there. So why don't we get right to it, and we'll bring them into our thing, Bob and Rick. And guys, I just want to say thank you for joining us tonight, and we're going to start with you, Rick. So we would like you to give our audience an overview of what you mean by resiliency.
My man, how are you guys? And good evening, everybody.
Good.
Resiliency, the ability to be able to be stretched to your maximum capacity and rebound as close to whole as possible. That's fireman ease. That's
fireman
my take
ease.
On resiliency.
I liked it.
And you know what I'm talking about, Mike.
Well,
and
that.
Mike and Bob. I mean, yep. Listen, man. You get those long calls, you get those late calls, you're up all night, you're working a 48-hour shift, you've seen tragedy, You're putting a roof on your house. You know, your wife's giving birth to like the 20th baby or something. You know, and you've got all these problems and stuff going on in your head. How do you mitigate them? What are you telling yourself? I mean, there's a lot of stuff that that's underlying with all that. But it's the same way with training. The performance training, very similar to the mental health training, and vice versa. What do you think, Bobby?
I agree with that, and to tag on to that, you know, that when you talk about stretching to the limit and then bounce back to some semblance of what you were before, and that depends on what the stressor is or how acute it is or how you know, potentially overwhelming it is. But all of these events change you a little bit. All of them do. And the resiliency part of it is to bounce, like you said, to bounce back to some semblance of what it was before the event.
That's great. And I know, because anybody who knows me and has talked to me knows that I went through my own personal stuff with 9/11 and being angry and pissed and everything else and going to funerals all the time. And coming back to being a dad, a husband, and a father, you know, I don't care who you are or what you are in the fire service. There are people out there that love you, and they want you to come back to them. And the biggest kick in the stomach I ever took was from my six-year-old daughter at the time saying, "Daddy, why are you always angry?" And, I mean, I've been in a couple of barroom fights at my age. And I've never been hit that hard in my entire life. So I think this is a great topic, and I think it's going to do a lot. So, Rick, I have another one for you, and it's about the biometrics of the fear response. What does that involve? What is that?
Okay. Let's see. Let's use you as an example. Who was that asked you, "Why are you always so angry?"
My daughter, Emily.
How old was she at the time?
6.
So at 6 years old, she can pick up on behaviors. She can feel it when you walk in the room. I don't know how you put that into words, but she can see it in your posturing. She can hear it in your voice. The way that you're, you know, everything from tone to the way that you're carrying your body language and everything, and maybe even proximity to her. Maybe you try to keep your distance from them. Whatever it is, at 6 years old, you have the ability to be able to pick up people's affect. Okay, so the biometrics just helps us to be able to monitor your heart rate. When we put you in stressful situations, which we do in when we're doing the performance training, we have to have a way to be able to monitor you. So the biometrics looks like your heart rate, your respiratory rate, your blood pressure, your maximum heart rate, your heart rate variability, and your temperature. Those were the 5 things that we were monitoring. We've narrowed it down to just 1, which is a heart rate monitor now, because quite frankly, we cannot afford the equipment to do that. The equipment's out there. We just don't have the technology. So directly on top of – excuse me.
Whoops. Okay. Well, I think we lost him completely. He hung up on us. So we will get back to that one.
I hope his dog didn't kill him.
Well, I hope somebody wasn't breaking into the house. So,
if you've ever sat in Rick's living room, that's not an uncommon thing. That, you know, all of a sudden dogs are barking and then chaos ensues. So, you know, if I'll see if I can fill in a little bit for him here, if you guys don't mind, that where he was going with is, you know, we were using some equipment that monitored those 5 parameters, and they were so predictable. And you know, we didn't invent this stuff. We didn't, you know, and we cite our subject matter experts throughout the text of this book. This has been followed by you know, military training, special ops training, collegiate athletes and professional athletes for many years. And it just seems like it's taken a long time for it to hit the fire service. But when we were using that highly technical live monitoring with five parameters being monitored at one time, our exercise physiologists tell us when one of the guys was about to go sideways in the exercise. It was that predictable. And then you'd see, and we would be observing at the same time the psychomotor skills start to trail off, the cognition, the temper, you know, their temperament starts to change. So there's a direct correlation with the psychological response. There's the hormonal release that's triggered in the areas of the brain, which I'll let Rick go into that when he gets back in with us, that affect we call it the psychophysical aspects, okay? So that affects your blood pressure, your heart rate, your respiratory rate, your temperature variance, you know, even in minor amounts, just with those kind of stimuli. So what that amounts to is it changes performance, okay? So, excuse me. So when we're monitoring, when we're using the technology, and we've narrowed it down to this very predictable change with heart rate and a range of heart rate that are directly associated with it, that it's the easiest one for us to monitor during the performance training. And it's pretty enlightening for the individuals too. And some might ask, well, who's going to be biometrically monitoring people on the fire ground and knowing when they're getting sideways and like that? Well, the point of the training is that it teaches them to recognize what they're experiencing when that happens. When we check them up and realize it's like, no, you're going sideways here. Tell us about that conversation in your head right now. And, you know, the rumination, the negative self-talk, you know, you start talking yourself out of performing, you know, and they're very predictable responses under duress, physical and emotional duress.
That sounds pretty cool.
And I really wish Rick would hop back in here.
I think he is back in here.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry about that. Somebody was breaking into the house. The dog got a hold of him. I had to hang up to hide the body in the back.
Right.
So I'm just kidding. Please do not call the police.
Hey, Rick, how was his heart rate when you grabbed a hold of him and punched him? How was his heart rate? Was he resilient?
It's still coming down. where I left off, I think Bob pretty much covered it, but the biometrics isn't just what we're seeing. It's exactly what – or it isn't just the homeostasis that we're looking at, which is all the heart rate, the respiratory rate, the temperature, the blood pressure, all of that. It's also the way that they're behaving. And so the goal is to be able to teach them. Biometrics is a great diagnostic tool for us to be able to show them how it works, but it's also a great tool for the individual to learn how to have personal arousal level controls. So when you start to get anxious, when you start to get excited, it's normal, okay? But once you get into the job and into your training, everything should come back down. So the anticipation, there's an anxiety that comes with it. Anxiety isn't always bad. It can show up as anticipation, you know? And it's like a good meal at the firehouse. You can't wait to get to it. And then the tones drop, and it's kind of like, you know, a big letdown, but it's the same way when you're training. You get excited before you get in there to do something on your way to the job. But once you're into it, everything should come back down. And that's because you're relying on your training. In the mental health field, the hypervigilance doesn't shut off because we have better instruction on the fire ground than we do in our personal lives. Make sense?
Oh. Makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it totally does. And, I know this topic is, you know, fairly vast, and we'll, for those of you listening, we'll dig into the various, you know, pieces of it as we go. What we tried to do is to talk a bit about the actual, I guess, if you will, the mechanics of it, the biometrics and the fear response and all this stuff. We're going to intersperse questions like that for our listeners. But what we also wanted to do was, instead of just giving you a big chunk of that right off the bat, we're going to talk about it a little bit. And then we're going to talk about some of the ways to train it so that you see that's doable, and that the average, you know, the average dumb redhead out there who's sitting in a firehouse can hear this material, which at times I know intellectually it can be a little daunting, the science behind it and all of that, or even the emotion behind it. And so we're going to kick back and forth, and this is going to be an example. And so, you know, Bob, talking about the training of this, all right, is this stuff that you put in the book and the resiliency stuff with all the science and everything else, is it something that can be trained? And, you know, for all our guys who are going to be listening, I think that are going to be fired up by what you guys talk about. How do you begin that process? How does, you know, I'm a captain sitting in my firehouse, or I'm a training captain. How do I begin the process in my own department, or, you know, in integrating with the information that you guys have put in the book? By the way, if we didn't say it, the book is Developing Firefighter Resiliency. And for those of you who are listening, whether you're in the chat room or thinking about calling in, you want to have, maybe you're nervous about calling in and talking to these boys, we're going to give away two copies of the book. And if two people call, those two people get, you know, copies of the book. If you're asking questions on the chat room, your name gets thrown in the hat. 760-454-8852. Bob, can it be trained? How do you begin that process, brother?
The short answer is yes, it can. The long answer is there's a lot of layers to this onion. And it's as you know, we started working on a project to write a book about training, you know, years ago, and your encouragement just kept me on track. But, you know, Rick and I started doing some work together, and we started to realize it's like, yeah, this is really some of the same stuff that myself and my counterparts with Miami-Dade in the training division, Mike Posner and Elvin Gonzalez, Rob's training captain with me, is something that we had been developing, had been utilizing in our small scale training exercises and our department wide training initiatives. And you know, when I got together with Rick about this, you know, and learning what he was teaching and how far he was going into the psychophysical aspects of this, it's like, okay, well, that's why what we're doing works. So the answer is yes, it can be trained. But an understanding, this is why we blended this into one text, is because the understanding of how the body responds to stresses, okay, understanding what those stressors are, which stressors you respond the greatest to, and being able to recognize your reaction to that stress and to manage it, because you can't always have your cheerleader, you know, leaning over your shoulder and you know, talking in your ear and encouraging you. So, but the point is that all of those psychophysical responses that happen under performance, under, you know, when you're getting dispatch information rolling to the job that, you know, there's a report of, you know, of people trapped, you get multiple calls on that, you know, your heart rate starts going up, you know, your head starts going. We've all sat in that right front seat many times, and the call starts to go on in your head before you even arrive. And as Rick said, once you're able to step off and get into it, then you should dial back down into that performance zone. But the thing is that the training ground, the actual just going to the training event triggers a lot of those same responses. That's why, you know, a lot of departments, they'll report that, like, on training day, there's a lot of sick call on training day. And I think we have to ask ourselves as trainers, especially those that are doing the formal training, not just the company officers, but those that are organizing formal training within an organization, have to ask ourselves, well, you know, why are we getting so much sick call on our training days? This should be something we're looking forward to. And so you got to look at what the culture of that training is, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, you know, I think a little bit later, and why we call this a success-based training model. But those same psychophysical responses that happen in that "oh my God" event happen on the training ground too, and they're barriers to learning. And we shouldn't be contributing to all of the toxic soup that we tend to swim in on the training ground, because that's where we're going to make the performance happen, on the fire ground. And so, Bobby, a lot of times, a lot, Yeah.
Explain to them how we do that, how we ratchet it up little by little to develop competence and confidence in the industry.
Right. Well, you know, the competence is the cornerstone of mastery. And a lot of times, and I think we tend to fall into the same, you know, habits that those who trained us did, for better or worse, and sometimes worse, the exercise may require the objectives of the exercise. And this is what we talk about in that section of the book, is setting objectives and identifying objectives and developing those objectives. That if the object require a level of mastery for performance, but competency has not been established, then the results are predictably high rates of failure. And when there's high rates of failure in your training program, just like anything else that's, and it becomes traumatic, and you guys have, I know we've all seen it and been party to it or part of it, where it can get pretty over the top. It can kind of, it really can take on the guise of a traumatic event. And when you get exposed to enough traumatic events, what's your response to those traumatic events? You tend to avoid those circumstances. So, did that cover where you were going with that, Rick?
Yes. Most people think that, well, that's not true now. I think people understand when they take our class, it is a ball buster, but with a purpose. And the balls get busted because everybody's balls are different sizes. So not everybody's balls gets busted the same way, if that makes sense out there and to everybody. And so it's important that they understood the way that we dole that out, and that it's not one of those everybody gets a trophy things.
As it should be. And I think that's very important that we understand this, because in the fire service, I mean, we have to make sure that we understand all of the stuff that we're doing there. So it just, you know, it's not all fun and games. They were life and death decisions that we have to make. And that also kind of leads us towards our next question. Bob, you talk about implementing a success-based training model. What exactly are you talking about?
Well, a lot of people hear that term. I think they think, okay, here's another step in the. You can put whatever adjective is appropriate for your comfort, but the softening of the fire service. And it's anything but that. And as Rick alluded to, it's like, you know, how do we ratchet it up? It's like, well, you know, you have to establish the competency first, okay? That's a base level of understanding and performance, okay? And then, little by slowly, you add in degrees of difficulty, okay? And this is what I'm talking about when I say, it's like, you know, it's like, competency has to be established before mastery can be performed. And if your objectives are designed intentionally or unintentionally for the participant to already have mastered this skill set, or to be at some level of mastery or higher than just basic, pardon me, that, you know, there's going to be a predictable failure rate. So success-based training doesn't mean easy. And as Rick said, it's like anybody that's taken our performance classes know that it's anything but easy. Okay. But it is success-based. And that comes from the instructor. Okay. And, you know, as officers and instructors, we are going to ask, and we're going to ask our people, our ordinary people, Joe Blow off the street that's walked into the fire service for whatever reason, whatever their motive was, ordinary people to do extraordinary things, okay? And that doesn't happen by accident, and it can't be taken for granted. And in order for people to do extraordinary things and perform at a high level, they've got to kind of trust you a bit, right? So that trust is developed by the instructor. And most of these, what I call failure-based training models and approaches, come from a reputation of the instructor or the organization's culture, where the student steps off the rig at the training ground expecting to fail expecting to be dogged, expecting to, no matter how well they perform, the trainer is going to change the objectives and guarantee their failure. Now, a lot of us learn in that very environment. I'm not saying it doesn't work. It's just not as effective. And there's damage done along the way. You create training scars. Okay? Training scars are barriers to learning. Barriers to learning are barriers to performance. So the success-based training model is one in which the instructor and the student both expect that this is going to be a successful event. This is going to be a successful exercise, and that's going to translate to successful performance in the field. That's the short of it.
Excellent. You guys all right there? Somebody using an air gun on something or what?
We tend to pick up background noise. If you have a fan. Yeah. Yeah.
Somebody making a protein shake on the air or what? Sounds like a drill or something going on back there. Listen, I just wanted to tag on to that if I could for a second. I know we have a format. So when guys come into the fire service, some are unsure. Some come from a different fire department into a new fire department, and so they have a different way of doing it under their SOPs, okay? So when they come in, if we do not establish, and Bob will go into that later about the laws of adult learning, if we don't establish what it is that we're looking for and then walk them through it to make sure that they understand it, we can't begin to expect them to perform the way that we expect them to perform. And they definitely will not be able to do it under duress if they have not established that baseline yet. So, and it's the same with anything that we do. The problem is, a lot of people think that they should take this giant sandwich made out of poop, right, and take a bite out of it, and somehow that's going to make you better, and that's not true. While I will argue for as long as the day is long that successes are built on our failures and that you have to expect to fail, you should not be going into your career path expecting to fail. You should only be failing when you're pushing the envelope, knowing that you're trying to exceed what your current limitation or your current ceiling is. That's how you develop greater resiliency. That's how you develop greater rapid pattern recognition. That's how you improve your situational awareness. That's how your peripheral vision and everything else opens up. That's how your biometrics tend to calm down. Okay, so it's like running. When you run, you exceed your maximum heart rate capacity so that when the race comes, your heart rate won't be that high. It will know what it's like because you have prepared your body. Your mind has prepared your body for where it's going to have to go. So there's a couple of things where they're misunderstandings, and I'll clear this up in 1 second. This is my last example on this. The United States Navy SEALs BUDS program is the elite of the elite, okay? You are taking the top 1% of the top 10%. Can you imagine just cracking into the top 10% of those guys? Well, when they wash out of BUDS, for whatever reason it is, they are crushed and they feel like they have no value. Now, I don't know if a lot of people are aware of that. It's the equivalent in the fire service of going to smoke divers in Georgia, and you take smoke divers and you thought you've prepared yourself, but you have never developed the mental aspect to prepare yourself for a battle of endurance like that, because that is a battle of attrition and you still have to be able to think through it. And so the success-based training model prepares you for that type of a response, to be able to handle those things when they're coming at you. And granted, we all have a ceiling. That's why we call this resiliency training and not stress inoculation, because stress inoculation, you really can't inoculate anybody. The stress level always goes higher. The stress level always goes higher. You're always, at one point or another, if you're pushed hard enough, you will exceed your capacity, you know, and you'll crack. That's a human thing, you know, and if your ego doesn't allow you to understand that, We'll be catching you on the back end. You'll be back. Does that help add some clarity to that?
It does. It does. And I think, and I'm not sure if it's Rick Lasky, but somebody came up with that, and I love the term, and I know I've heard it in a couple of different places, that ego. Somebody says ego eats brains, and I'm not sure who said it, but I think it's one of the best lines I've ever heard. And it's true.
True story.
Yep.
You know, and you know, just to wrap that success-based training model, what's it? You've got to ask yourself what the activity or the exercise that you're about to undergo with your guys and gals. You got to ask, what are we doing here? Are we training? Are we drilling? Or are we testing? Okay, training is developing that competency. That's where you're learning something new. You're mating up new information with information you already have, okay, and coming up with a new understanding or a new skill set. That establishes competency. Drilling is the repetition. Drilling is the, and that's one of the laws of learning, the law of repetition. It's on the path to mastery. And during that repetition, then you ramp up the intensity. Okay, and that's what gets you to mastery. But the no-notice drill, you know, show up at the training ground and park over there and we'll tell you what's going to happen next. And you have no idea what's going on. You don't know what's expected of you. And they just throw this end-of-the-world scenario at a crew that's just driven across town to get to the training site, you know, and they fail because they don't know what you're looking for. And if the trainer's got the wrong ego and the wrong attitude about what their role is there, It's not even going to matter how well those crews perform, because they're going to ensure that they change the objectives and that will result in their failure. Now, I'm not saying that the no-notice drill doesn't have a place in the program, but if your training program is a steady diet of that, you're chipping away at the resiliency of your members.
Yeah, you are, and you're affecting your people, so. And there is nothing worse than making them go away thinking they're not good enough because they failed the training.
And then they start to believe that. And you did that.
Yeah.
You're the one responsible for that. So.
Yeah, I've had training chiefs point out that our people can't find a fire, you know, in under X amount of time. And my comment was, well, it's your training model. It's coming to fruition. This is it. I find it hard to believe that we have 1,500, 2,000 people in combat and we hire dumbasses. Yeah, I don't think so. I think maybe the way that we're delivering stuff isn't accurate, which is another big motivator for this book because it addresses what we're talking about. Bob's section is very, very clear on the delivery of this information. And the information that Dave and I put together is pretty much the science behind it. And there's some tips on how to incorporate it, but it's why it should be done this way. It's backed with science.
I've actually got a little notepad here and I'm writing as I go. So for our listeners, so you got some questions.
You know there's a book out. You don't have to do
now,
that.
I do know there's a book, but maybe – hey, you know what, brother? You're the subject matter expert, so I don't want to –
I'll sign it for you. I actually owe you one.
Hey, you know what else, though? I'm also aware, because I've kind of listened to you guys through the years, that people who engage with the material and take notes while the material is going on cement the material at their mind a little bit better. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to follow your lead by taking a little notes to cement the material into my mind. Is that okay?
I love it, bro. I just got home from a trip to Houston.
And the master becomes a student.
Well, hey, let's do this real quick. So we went through, you know, so those are great answers on, you know, they can be trained. There's a process to begin. The success-based training model. So now let's kick into a little bit of the nuts and bolts. And I would take all of our listeners, and Bob and Rick, I would take you back to a comment that Mike made right at the beginning.
And we talk about this story in our class on firehouse excellence. We also, Ann and I talk about it in the firefighter marriage class. We share Mike's story about his how 9/11, as you would imagine, rocked him to his very core. And it's interesting that it rocked Mike because, let's face it, Rick, you know Mike. Bob, you know Mike. I know Mike really well. If your game is that you're a big, tough guy and that this stuff will never get to you, the stuff of the job will never impact you, you got it sorted, I would respectfully submit to you that there's very few people in my life that I've met that I respect more than Mike Dugan. And Mike's a tough guy. And Mike's a guy who's done – you know, really, really commendable and incredible things in the fire service. And when I listened to this guy, I listened to this, my friend talk about his daughter. And with tears in his eyes, he talked about his little girl. And I'm telling you, these two little girls, they're not little anymore, but they're little to him, they're his heart. They're his very heart. And when he has one of them, and it was actually both, but one said it, when he has them looking up at him, like he's starting to become mean and he's starting to become a monster, I can tell you it broke that guy. Here's the cool thing. Mike's a man of integrity, and instead of just saying, it can't get to me, I'm going to form a wall, he actually went out and did some things to make sure that never happened again. And I cannot tell you how much I respect Michael for having the guts to do it. So in your book, how did you guys talk about the mental health side of it, the emotional side of it, emotional well-being? How did you address that in the book? And I know it's broad, it's a lot, but can you at least give I'm trying to get people to go out and buy this book tonight. What are a few things that you talked about, kind of the key things on health and well-being? Rick, go ahead.
We first of all, everybody is little next to Mike, okay? So let's just get that out there right now. Everybody looks up to Mike, let's put it that way. And I agree with you on the whole tough guy thing. And I'll be the first to call people out, you know, cause there ain't nobody around here that wears capes. You just have to find it one day. The chink in your armor is going to show up. And with Mike, it came in the sound of a 6-year-old girl's voice, and it altered his perspective. It woke him up. It shook his world. Most of the time, the mental health aspect of this does not come because you can't force it down people who think that they're bomb-proof, you know? So I just encourage them. Yeah, bro, you got it, man. You got it all figured out. Just keep doing what you're doing, you know? Because what happens, you have to be broken unless we teach this on the front end and it becomes a cultural shift. You have to get broken in order to listen. When you're broken and your spirit is just crushed and mentally you're thinking about things you've never thought about, your emotions are all over the place. You can't sleep. You can't, there's so many triggers, you know, the sound of bagpipes driving down the street, station houses that you work at, uniforms. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, you know, that it will run your life. We were talking before the show started that we've had a couple suicides in the state of Florida this week, several deaths and a couple suicides. This is not going to stop, man. It's not going to stop until people recognize that, you know what? This is legit, man. This is bigger than you. This is bigger than all of us. Okay, let me equate it to this. When you're in the fire service and you're young, and you just running and gunning, you know, you're made out of Teflon, man. You can do anything. You can run. You can lift. Put me in that little hole. I don't care. You know, I'll do it. Black me out. Give me everything you got. You know, when you're young like that, it's all good. And as you get older, things start to change. You start to learn. You mature. And so there's a huge shift that occurs with maturity. Well, what happens is that eventually that mindset stays. And if we don't start recognizing it in our people and being able to put our finger on it and point it out to each other in a healthy way, like, you know what, man, that might not be the best response. Let's go to a bar and let's go freaking unwind for a little while. you know, okay, maybe if you do it responsibly, and it's not always your go-to response. But if after every hard shift or every day that you're home because you're off work and you owe it to yourself to pound some beers, to snort some coke, to shoot some heroin, to go pick up a hooker, to beat your wife, to be a jerk to your children, whatever excuse you got it, like if you lived my life, you would do this too. When you get to that point, it's too late. But hopefully that brokenness brings you around to be able to stay open-minded. Because most of us, when we're young, we lack in humility. Mike mentioned it about the ego. It eats brains. Well, it also does that when you're young, because because we can absorb so much. And we don't have that much, you know, with regards to a baseline on what it is that we're facing. So as you get older, things change. Your life changes. And your life isn't – your life – you're put here on this planet to be victorious. See, I believe in God, and you know, and I tell people all the time, you know, this is part of the deal, man. You want to hear my message, you're going to hear about God, and you don't worry about it. It ain't like an STD. You ain't going to get it just because you get next to me or hear it from me, or, you know, it's not contagious, you know. But it was that really opened my eyes to a lot of things, because when I came to the fire service, I had a purpose, and my ego interrupted that purpose. And eventually, through a series of events, which I call providence, it brought me back to that purpose. But it took me to get broken to bring me back to that purpose. Now, you can be successful without a purpose, but you will never be fulfilled. And until you are fulfilled, you will always have that hole, and you will always try to fill it with all kinds of crap, and it won't work. And the reason that hole there is because God put that hole there. Because he wants you to come to him, because that's what softens the heart of men like Mike Dugan when a six-year-old girl talks. Does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah. That answers my question. And you hit that right on the head, brother. You hit that right on the head. And there are some other things we're going to talk about, and we're going to talk about in techniques and things like that. So, Rick, this one's for you. What are some of the things you've done to get past things like anxiety, mass confidence, zero visibility, and confined space? And again, if anybody tells you that they like mass confidence, zero visibility, and confined space, they're either a liar or a fool. But you want to make sure that you understand what we're doing and how we're getting these people to get into these places where they're not comfortable.
Right. So in the simplest of forms to describe it, mass confidence is removing the sense of vision. Now, if you think about it, the sense of vision is what affects you to be able to walk, move spatially. It's what attracted you to your spouse. It's the reason you bought that truck or that car or that house. You know, it's what determines much of our attraction. So if you clasp your hands together and put them behind your head, that much of your brain is allotted for vision. And so when vision is taken away from people, there's a predictable response that's going to happen. So we have to learn how to teach them to develop those other senses to be able to overcome what they've lost. And if you don't know how to successfully teach somebody how to paint the picture with your hands, okay, can you see it, all right? So what size opening is that? Is it big enough for you to go in through? Okay, climb through there. How deep does it go? What side of your body are you laying on? You know, are you laying on the left side? Are you laying on your right side? Are you crawling on all fours? Because one of those three ways I just gave you is more difficult to breathe than the others. And so when the breathing is interrupted, it changes everything. But when you're young, you can absorb it. So we'll keep it simple for right now. So when you're incorporating those senses, that's what occurs. Okay, and it's simple. The problem is that over time, or you get somebody that's been traumatized when they were younger, and then over time, you can't. So what happened to me was it was through the divorce that kind of shifted my entire perspective. So my mindset was completely altered. And what hurt me was that my family unit, the thing that it was just my safety net, okay? It was something that I never imagined would happen to me. I never thought I would actually be living a series of Jerry Springer episodes in my personal life. Nobody does. And so that interrupted my ability to be able to focus and pay attention to what it is that I'm supposed to be doing, and that's focusing on my job. So now I'm older, and I can't absorb that punishment the way that I used to when I was younger, okay? And it's okay to be able to get comfortable while you're doing mass confidence in confined space, even if you don't like it. We've all done it. But as you get older, so then that happened, and so my focus and my attention was no longer on the mission. My focus and my attention was, my life sucks right now, man. You know, I got nothing. I don't have a wife. I can't see my kids. I don't even have a house to live in anymore. What the fuck happened to my life? Why am I such a loser? Why does this keep happening to me? You know, man, is it hot in here? This sucks. I can't breathe. You know, this pack's heavy. It's too tight. You know, I'm uncomfortable. We focus on all the wrong stuff, rather than looking at the challenge that's ahead of us. Our fear takes over. It interrupts our mindset. That's the mental toughness aspect of this. This is the ruminative state, and that's what causes a lot of the anxiety to come on. It's what caused the anxiety to come on to begin with, but now it's leached over into my career path. Does that make sense, Mike? I mean, because so like after September 11th, it's like, listen, nobody, unless they've lived through it, can imagine what it's like to go to that many funerals, that amount of death, and the emotions and the depth of the emotions and the connections that are made with that. You know, and so to not expect it to affect people, that's just ignorant. It's stupid. And there's not a lot that I call stupid, but that is just sheer stupidity. Our first responders in New York across the board have taken, actually absorbed the unthinkable. You know, and what have we done to help that? How have we mitigated it? We force guys into retirement for lung issues? You know, they're too old, you got to go. And no, you can't have your badge.
Yep.
So we lose our connection. We lose our purpose. It's taken from us. And that's part of what happened in my story. But it is a common thread. Man, dude, I see this. When I go to work at that treatment center, I see this in some hard men. These are some tough, tough guys. And I see them. They're from corrections. They're from law enforcement. Every military discipline, these guys are, they're firemen. These are some hard, tough men. And it's the same story. And the level of brokenness, it is heartbreaking. That's the way I can only explain. It's just, it's freaking heartbreaking.
Well, buddy, I appreciate your transparency. I really do. And I think it's one of the reasons why the message that you three are bringing is resonating so strongly. Number one, I love you for it. And number two, my hope is that so the folks of you out there listening, you know, you're listening to, you know, Bob and Mike both share their stories. You're listening to two guys that I consider to be not only tough men, but good men. If they have gone through it and come out the other side, so can you. As important to the fact that it can be done, I want you to recognize everybody is getting these impacts and these stresses and these strains. They are. Myself included, you know, everybody I think has put on a pack, gone into a fire, watched people die, get torn up, the whole nine yards. Especially why I know of late guys are just dealing with so many firefighters who are going through stresses and strains. I know just hearing the stories even has, you know, its own impact. And I hope everybody out there listening, you know, isn't getting the impression that we're saying, oh, the sky is falling and it's the end of the world and poor us. And it's not that. I mean, there's not any four firefighters in the world right now that are not more thankful for being a part of the fire service than thankful for the calling that we accepted. This is a, I hope, an authentic and transparent look at the realities of what comes down the pipe, and hopefully a way for you to navigate some of this stuff so you can continue do your calling to get out there and meet the needs of the citizens and to go into their most chaotic day and make it a good outcome. And the hope is that on the tail end of that, as you start to wind down your career and as you start to move into, you know, the transitionary phase and then into retirement, which is coming for all of you, that you're going to be able to do it in a healthy way and, you know, have as little, I guess, hang-ups and heartburns and baggage as you go. Some of the things that you talked about, gang, you talked about it in the repetition and you talked about having confidence. And, Bob, I want to stay there and really try to give our listeners this idea of why confidence begets competence. Why, and conversely, why confidence begets confidence. But
Mike, I have an idea. We could take a question and have Bob implement it on his part of the book, because he actually gives you the entire layout with the safety plan and these features that he's added in the book. He's given you the keys to the kingdom, how to do all this stuff. Maybe if he could incorporate it with that. And what do you think about that, Bob? Is that doable?
Bob, you with us?
Yes, I am. Sorry, I had my phone muted. It cut out some background.
You fell asleep. That narcolepsy kicked right in, didn't it, bro?
The stress.
Yeah, your voice. Your voice does that to me, right?
My voice.
Sorry, I'm telling.
Can you pull that off, Bob?
I think so. Yeah, I think it'll roll together here. So. You know, there's a graphic in my workshop that I use, and I really wish I know where I picked it up from so that I could give the individual or the organization or whatever. I don't think I'm clever enough to think this up on my own, but it's a loop, and it's confidence begets confidence, and confidence begets competence. And I ask in my workshop which comes first. And it usually starts a riot. But, and the answer is, it's kind of like the chicken and the egg. It doesn't matter. We have them both, and we need them both. They're interdependent upon each other. So, but we play a role in that as the company officer, as the guy sitting on the tailboard next to the other guy sitting on the tailboard, sitting in the jump seat, to instill the confidence. And some would argue that it's like, no, the confidence comes from within. And it's like, and I go back to the failure-based training model concept that if you believe that I am going to fail you in this exercise, it almost doesn't matter what your skill set is, because that ruminative state that Rick talked about in his personal life starts to creep into our professional life and our performance. Okay, so you start talking yourself out of even being able to as good as you are, let alone whether you're meeting the expectations or where you think you ought to be. But you talk yourself out of how good you are. So as an instructor, as a coworker, as an officer, you know, for our company and our students to believe that we believe in them. And on the back of the book, there's three key messages. It comes from a graphic that was generated by my friend Kim Fitzsimmons in Missouri, who's going through a tough health thing. Ooh. Right now. And we wish her well, but, it was a graphic that said three key messages. This is important. Can do this. I won't give up on you. Those are three really powerful statements that if your training approach, your firehouse approach, and you guys talk about, you know, this house rocks, and I've seen that class, and you'll say, and firehouse excellence, you know, that's what that's based in. You know, that mantra is very deep in that mentality and that approach, that culture of how you want your firehouse and your life to be. So we give them confidence. I won't give up on you. You can do this. We provide that, and Rick talks about the mindset. The mindset affects the psychology. The psychology affects the physiology. The physiology affects the performance. It's almost an undeniable truth. So, and then with that confidence comes competence, comes ability. Competency means ability. Okay? So, and then you have set that level of trust to guide your coworkers and your peers, you know, or your company or your students, you know, along a path of competency or performance, and then ultimately to mastery. So, to tie it into the safety plan and the planning and kind of going back to, you know, can this be trained, you know, or, you know, can it be structured? The answer to that is yes. And in the book, I go through a generic safety plan that it's had several forms within my own department, and I share it at all my workshops. And it was quickly the most feared document in the company officer training list of forms to use, because they felt like if they put hazards on that safety plan, if they identified hazards in the training, that the safety police were going to come in and shut the whole exercise down. It just simply wasn't true. It's like if you're doing a training exercise involving ladders, there are hazards with dealing with ladders. If you're doing ropes and knots and hoists, there are hazards involved with that. If you're doing auto extrication, there are hazards. Our responsibility is to mitigate them. You can't eliminate them, but you can mitigate them. But this safety plan that I talk about in the book is a very useful template, not only for covering our collective behinds from a safety standpoint, but it's a very effective tool, especially for the new trainer that's really not sure how to get it from concept to application. You know, I got an idea of a drill I want to do, but, you know, what do I do? As I said earlier, there's a lot of layers to the onion. Well, this form that we talk about will, serves as a very effective template to walk you through that. It's setting objectives, identifying equipment that's necessary, who's responsible for what SOPs or SOGs are involved. And that's all part of building that success-based training model environment. You know, it's a well-planned exercise. It's not, you know, seat of the pants, cowboy stuff. And that helps to build, that helps to instill that confidence in the participants and in your coworkers and in your crew.
I think that's great. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it did. I think you did it justice.
Well,
go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Bobby. You know, really, really, really good. I mean, you guys give incredibly dense answers, and dense as in weighty and full of depth, not dense as in dumb. There's about eight different ways I could go off of that, and I'm not going to. I think that's a great answer. It stands on its own. Here's what I want to do. I have a caller from the great state of Oregon, Kevin from Cornelius Fire, and I'm a little bit fearful. Rick, my stress response is coming up because right as we're getting ready to come out of the room, he said, "Yeah, I just was in one of your classes here not too long ago. I'm not sure how this is going to go. This could go really good for me or really bad." Kevin, you're on with Bob Carpenter and Rick talking about resiliency, and brothers, the floor is yours.
Great. So I do have one question. I'm signed up to take your resiliency class at the firemanship conference here coming up at the end of the month. And right. I just got the book, haven't had a chance to go all the way through it. I'm a little worried about what to expect.
And you know what, Kevin? Most people are, and here's what I can tell you. So, you know, we recognize training is not a one-size-fits-all. Everybody is different. Everybody has different feelings. Everybody has different capabilities. Everybody is different. So this, with the training that you're in, is your training against yourself, bro. This is not us pushing you into some spooky, scary place. You will have an instructor with you all the time. We will push you and push you and push you because we want, we can only use exercise as a way to exhaust you, because when we exhaust you, we do two things, exhaustion and frustration. And we utilize both of those in your self-talk. And then once your self-talk starts going, that's when we start working, because that's where we build resiliency. We show you, okay, look, this is your hurdle. It's not your body. Your body can do this. Your hurdle is between that 6 inches of real estate between your ears, and it's messing with you right now. So what are you telling yourself? Bobby was talking about that, you know. And guys will go through that, and we'll ask you, what are you doing? But more importantly, in some of the drills, some of the tests that we have in the drills are to show you and for us to be able to see what your executive functions are looking like, because some of the tests are thinking tests in the middle of a drill. Others are small motor function and thinking drills. And so we will put you under duress to see how you react. And we also have you on a heart monitor. So there's a lot of layers in there, and we can explain it all better. But if you read the book, you'll have a great foundation, bro. I mean, I think you're really going to enjoy the class. You're going to develop a camaraderie with everybody in there. You know, this is a test for yourself, bro. You're not being tested against anybody else. This is all you, and you will have an instructor with you the entire time.
Well, and you know, some of the stuff that I've been reading and talking about how that elevated heart rate and you lose some of that fine motor skills, and I've been trying to work on my physical fitness, and I go to a boot camp, right, and I'm up in the 150s, 160s, and you're doing exercises. And before I started doing that, I always wondered why they had these little counters, or you would mark things on the board as you did your reps. And once you get up to that high heart rate, I found it, my brain doesn't function like it's supposed to. So I'm actually looking forward to this to try to develop some of those skills, so that knowing how to make my brain work better in those situations.
Right. And so there's a difference. Okay. So the one you're talking about is a physical exhaustion, and the brain doesn't work because it's tired. The body's tired, and the body's telling the brain, hey, I'm tired. What the hell's wrong with you? I want a break. Let's go get a cheeseburger. Okay. But the one we're talking about is the one where it tells you you're not good enough. Okay? So the difference is the you're not good enough, this is scary, you're going to die, you suck. Those things, they release hormones that create an irrational thought process. That's the red or the yellow, the green, red, black that Grossman talks about on the scale that he has with Seidel, right, that guy's made. And so that's the difference. One is a physical exhaustion. The other one is the mind telling everything else, we got problems, man. And what that does is it shifts into the sympathetic nervous system and cause a cascade effect of a lot of just bad shit.
You know, if I could add in there, if we're students of the fire service, we check in and we watch fire porn on YouTube every once in a while, and we tend to get really judgmental about what we're seeing people doing, and invariably, to the uninitiated, when they see somebody doing something completely irrational, they're going, "What is that idiot doing? He doesn't know what the hell he's doing," and that's not far off. But there's a reason. It's not that he doesn't know. It's he may very well just be in a place of arousal and so overwhelmed, okay, and his confidence is shaken, and he's starting to doubt his abilities and doubt what he knows, and this thing's going sideways, and nothing I'm doing on the scene is making it better, and you start to perform irrationally. If we can teach you how to recognize that, under training scenarios, and you can catch yourself before you get into that cascade of disaster. If that makes sense. But that only comes with hard work. It only comes with hard work. It's like you can't just read the book and go, okay, got it. No, you have to experience it.
Right, and that's
Kevin,
one of the things.
One other thing. One of the difficulties that we've had with putting this class on is it's been very difficult for us to find instructors that understand this, because when we're handling students, that's we cannot miss a teaching opportunity. We cannot miss the moment, because if you do, you screw the student up. So it's been very difficult. And now with the Fit to Fight Fire guys, with John Spira and Tom and Craig and Kevin Housley and that whole crew with Firefighter Craftsmanship, we have a cadre of instructors, bro. You will be in the hands of some of the best in the business with regards to this. These men not only understand it, they've been through it. And so you're in good hands, bro. Our job is to make you better, to make you more resilient. I mean, it's hard. It's going to suck doing it, but it's going to be a suck you're going to like.
Right. And you know, again, we don't, you know, my thought process is any chance I get to take a class like this or to improve myself in any way that I can, I'm going to jump on that, you know, and it's just I'm actually looking forward to it. You know, I know it's going to be kind of miserable, but it's going to be a good learning kind of miserable, if that's a thing.
you know what the crappy part is? After this clicked in for you and it clicked, your training is going to go up significantly. You're going to do this stuff to yourself willingly.
Yeah, that's,
from now
that's
on
good.
Into the...
I'm really looking forward to it, just to have that tool and to be able to perform in those situations.
Yes, yes. And the beauty of it is it's you will be able to help other people with it. And you know where the real value is? You'll understand the fear that they will have when it comes to this kind of training, because you have experience. So you'll know how to be able to talk to them. I know exactly what you're talking about, because I discovered this stuff. I couldn't keep a mask on my face. And it just happened, like, boom, came very, very quickly. And the anxiety, it was just crazy. There's a long, long story with regard to that. So everything that we're doing, I've been through it too. So, you know, all the men. And you're in good hands. You're gonna love it. You're gonna be a rock star.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Sweaty, really sweaty, tired, beat up rock star. But you're gonna be a rock star, my man.
That's
hey,
awesome.
Hey Kevin.
Yeah.
Hey Kevin. This is Galliano. I want you to know something. I gotta be careful here, because here's where I get in trouble. I want you to know that you are responsible for coining a new term, which I know is going to be a sticker for a helmet or a bumper sticker within the next 2 weeks. You want to know what it is? Resiliency training. Something you're going to like.
I like it. That's awesome.
I didn't hear it. What was it?
Resiliency training. The stuff you're going to like. You can steal that, Rick. You guys can steal that from.
No, you know, and I'll tell you, when we did this program in Denver at the Mile High last year, and we worked with these guys out of Aurora and out of Frisco, the Fit to Fight Fire guys and the Fireman Craftsmanship. The group that took the class, the 20 people that were in that class, were so jacked up at the end of it, you know, because like Rick said, it's like we finally got some guys that like get what we're talking about. They know how to apply it. They know what to look for. And it's going to be the hardest working success-based thing you've ever done, but you're going to dig it, and you know, you're going to be better for it. I'm confident. I look forward to meeting you.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great class. One other thing I want to talk about, too, that you guys mentioned earlier, a little bit of that PTSD kind of thing. I haven't had a really horrible experience other than, you know, some really bad calls when I was in my time in the fire service. But when I was in the military, we had a plane crash, and 10 of my guys or 9 of my buddies were killed in that plane crash. And I remember going through a process for, you know, about a year where I was just miserable, horrible person to talk to. You know, I'm really surprised my wife didn't divorce me at the time. But one of the things that I discovered too, then we had an incident when I was in the fire service a few years ago where two young girls were killed. The ability to go and talk to someone about that just seemed to be so much different. When I was in the military, it was, hey, here's a 15-minute thing. Yeah, we're going to talk about it. And then it was done. When the two girls were killed, it was, you know, several weeks process and being able to talk through that. And that was extremely helpful in that piece.
Yeah, that's interesting that you would bring that up. And I'm very proud of you recognizing that. A lot of the guys that we see, so I work with several neurologists. Freaking people got more freaking letters behind their name than the damn alphabet, okay? They are incredibly, they're big brain people, you know? And the way that he explained it to me, the doctor, the neurologist, he said, so after a traumatic event, you have a two-week period if a thing really resonates with you where it's an acute traumatic event in 2 weeks. You get some help, boom, you can get it squared away. After 2 weeks, it turns into a depressive state over the next 2 weeks. That four-week period, I coined it the incubation period. After that is when the PTSD starts to develop. And the longer that it goes unchecked, the bigger that monster gets, the more ammunition it gets, the more that it eats, the larger it grows. So we do stuff. Actually, Mike is poor. So the prayer and meditation has helped me tremendously. But we do the feedback, the neurofeedback, the mind mapping, and ultimately when we figure out how everything is working with the cognitive behavioral therapy, we go to neurostimulation. And I've been through 10 treatments of that in a less than a one-month period, in a two-week period. And the shifts, brain, they look for, been, dude, it's unbelievable, Kevin. I mean, I can watch and go through things now that I have not been able to do for years, and in that short of a period. So there is help out. The most important thing is what you said. It was not a big deal to go. You know, you went. You recognized it. You know, if something's bugging you, you go get some help, you dialed in, and you deal with it, you know?
Yeah, it's good stuff, and I think we, you know, we need to recognize, hey, it's not a sign of weakness, you know, to go get a little bit of help. We just don't know how to deal with this, and that's a good tool for the toolbox so that we're good, productive human beings, and we're good spouses and fathers and firefighters and friends and all those things that we do.
Exactly. Here's the next bumper sticker. It's a strength to know what your weaknesses are, that you can develop them in strength.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great point.
You know,
well, Kevin,
that's
hey,
a big deal, bro.
This is Galliano. Hey, buddy, thank you for calling. And just one thing real quick just for you. So you have Mike Duke, Dugan and Bob Carpenter and Rick George and myself, and we're all pretty committed to this idea of training and teaching and helping others do better. Every one of us is. I just want you to know from all of us, you are out there right now on the road coming back from a fire conference. You were just in a class that I did a few months ago trying to get better, and you've just said that you're going to be going to the firemanship conference, which all of us on this radio show heartily support, to try to learn resiliency. I want to say to you, brother, we salute you for being a craftsman and for being somebody who is engaged in the craft and wants to get better. You are exactly the type of firefighter. You're exactly the type of individual in this calling that Bob and Rick and Mike and David Gillespie, you're the guy that we are wanting to get out in touch through training, writing books for, because that's going to take it to your department and make things better. So on behalf of all of us, brother, as you're driving, please drive safe. And I want you to know that we really salute you. You're a big inspiration. And I know your department is very, very lucky to have you.
thank you so much. Again, it's just an opportunity of my time, and I want to be the best for, you know, like Cody says, as far as the firemanship conference, right? It's for them. We have to do that for the people that we work for, our families, our community. To me, it seems kind of like a no-brainer that I need to go out and get all this training so I can be the best. So I appreciate your thoughts, sir. Thank you so much.
Hey, Kevin.
Safe travel.
Hydrate for the class and don't eat more than your mask can hold, okay?
Got it. I've heard that before.
All right, bro.
All right, brother. Well, hey, thank you very much for calling. We really appreciate it. Michael, we're heading down to that magic hour. Bob, Rick, how about this for just one last question? What you can answer whichever one of these you want. What part of the book, what idea in the book, if you could just say one thing, are you most interested in the readers getting? What's the big nugget of all of them that they could take away? Or if you don't like that one, if there's too many nuggets, what do you think about the book will surprise the readers the most? Bob,
well,
why don't you start, brother?
The piece that I wanted to pay very close attention to is the segment between the preface and the last page.
Good answer.
I think what's going to surprise the readers is, one, is a lot of bang for your buck at the price point. I think that you're going to find that it reads well. I think it's going to resonate with anybody who's been on the job for more than 5 minutes, you know, because, the common denominator and the people that have been affected by the things that kind of, you know, spawned this book. Every one of us has that story, you know. The caller that just called in, he had that life defining. Some of the guys that have done the best work with us on this, like, they had that life defining incident, and you know, but for the grace of God, you know, they came out of it, and they, you know, and they're soldiering on, so to speak, And it's just, I think that there's a lot in this book. It's not a one-time read, you know, and I think that it's something that's going to be valuable to check back in on as the individual need arises, you know, because it covers a gamut of information. I think the thing that's going to surprise them is it sounds like a lot of technical mumbo jumbo, but it reads very well and it makes sense.
Cool. Okay. Now you, Rick.
For me, well, I think there's a lot of content in this book, man. I don't want to say it gets very technical, because the whole goal for us, the three of us, was that we wanted it somewhat in firemanese that you could understand it. But the truth of the matter is, the reason it gets a little technical sometimes is because I think that when you understand, when you're reading something like this, the most common reaction is, that's a bunch of crap, you know, that doesn't happen. Well, no, it does happen. And so it was very important that we put the vetted and researched information in there to back up what that is. And so that it does get technical in that aspect. There is a lot of information in there. The book's designed perfectly so that it sits on the water closet behind your toilet. So every time you take a dump, you can go ahead and download some info into your brain while you're downloading other stuff. Okay. And the reason it doesn't have a crayon is because Bobby Halton freaking halted it. He said no crayon in the book. He was scared firemen would eat it instead of take notes with it. And so the thing that I think most people are going to be surprised about in this book is that three knuckleheads like us wrote it.
Okay. That's fair.
When God calls you and he's got a purpose, you just go.
Yep.
You don't question.
Absolutely. So, in one other thing for you guys, just as we finish our final, oh man, hour and a half. We've already been at it an hour and a half. That's crazy. But how can our listeners get hold of you?
Oh, God.
What was how that can our listeners get a hold of you guys?
Hey, Michael. Let me ask that question, but let's do it in conjunction with a caller.
Okay.
So I'm going to bring in Will Seeley from Arizona. Will, you're on the radio show with Bob and Rick. And Will, your question's a really good one, and it's going to, I think, naturally transition us into how the rest of our listening audience can get a hold of these boys. So, brother, good to hear from you, and you're on with Bob and Rick.
Thanks, sir. I appreciate it. Thanks, guys, for everything that you do. The question that I had was, I work for a fire district that just recently consolidated with a smaller district, and the average age or the average time on of our district folks is probably 5 to 7 years. How do you get across to these younger guys how important this training is collectively? You know, I saw that, Rick, on Facebook, you were talking to John Wright the other day, and I was able to build a relationship with John through his what he went through. And, you know, we don't run a whole lot of fire in our organization, and we don't see a lot of the nasty stuff that everybody's seeing. So it's kind of the what if, and a lot of the guys just don't grasp the importance of this type of training. What recommendations would you guys have to build this into our younger folks?
Why don't you field that, Bob? I'll follow up.
Well, first of all, it's like, you know, the tenure that you're describing is your average the average amount of time on the job in your department. I'm going to drop a bombshell on you. I just retired from the 6th largest fire department in the country, and that's our average, too.
Wow.
Okay, so you're not unique. That's first. And I think it's important, especially as Rick alluded to earlier, if you were listening, that we need to get this on the front end. You know, we need to, you know, the understanding of what they're being immersed in. And, you know, you're probably seeing a lot of the same stuff that everybody else is seeing. And just, you know, I think after a while we do get a little bit numb to it, you know, and it just becomes normal. And it's like, we see stuff that normal people don't see. You know, your people, you know, that small district they just merged with, you know, they see stuff that the normal person doesn't see and have to deal with, you know? So if they read this information and take it to heart and then read it again and then plug it into what, you know, not only their fire department life, but in their personal lives and understanding what's going on with them, you know, then, you know, you don't have to do anything to get them to buy in, you know, because they'll inherently see it as important, you know? And they're all probably asking themselves the exact same question you're asking. You know, so, you know, a culture where that kind of questioning is acceptable, you know, and welcomed and encouraged is a big step in the right direction. Rick?
Yeah. Will, we impacted training in our department through the Fools, the Palm Beach County Fools. And that's because a group of guys from Orlando created the Fools because the Brotherhood was fractured. And so we developed this attitude of training as the bond that would bring our Brotherhood together, and it did. Worked tremendously well. We impacted the way training is done in Palm Beach County and beyond. And since then, the Fools has gone on even further. Those guys saved my career. The fire service saved my life, but the Palm Beach County Fools saved my career. And it was my point is to impact an entire department is going to be very difficult. If you can impact a smaller group and then be able to have that impact on even more people, Peer pressure does incredible things and motivates things to change. You get the right person in the place of authority, like Bob did when he went to training division. He had the right chief. They changed the culture and the way that training was done. So their calling in sick dropped off, and people started coming to training because it wasn't punitive. It wasn't testing. It was actually learning, and it was fun. It was educational. You know, it was challenging. And so this book is a methodology, and I by no way think that it's going to change the fire service. But I do think it's going to change the minds of the next generation coming in that is going to change the fire service and use this as a stepping stone. I think that where you guys take it, Will, that's what the intention of this book is. Where future generations take this, I'm excited to see where it goes. I am an old war horse, bro. I'm not going to be doing this much longer. You may be able to call me on the phone, and I'll put my cigar down and we'll have a conversation. But this whole training thing and flying all over the place and stuff, man, that would have been great when I was young. But I got stuff I want to do with my wife, with my grandkids, with my children. There's trips I want to take. There's things that I want to do. I'm shifting into that. And I love the fire service. It's always going to be a part of me. But I'm going to start doing less and less of it. And so this is our way to be able to kick this off and our way to be able to leave the fire service better than the way we found it. Now you have to find a way to leave your department better than the way you found it. And that's going to be surrounding yourself by the right people and making sure that the message is clear and concise. And that, you know, I think that when you read the book and you digest it and you go over it and a few people look at it with a bunch of different eyes, Mike Gagliano alluded to that when you have several people with co-authors like we did on this book, we approach the same subject matter from different perspectives, and it reaches many more people than just one of our personalities would. So that's what you're tasked with, you know, and you got a lot of people on your side. There is a lot of speed bumps and a lot of obstacles, but remember, they're just challenges, man. No, they're just challenges, and I have the utmost confidence. I have the utmost belief, and I really think you'll pull it off. I think that a lot of people will be pulling it off. This is going to there's already a lot of people doing this kind of stuff. So, you know, we're just trying to add some direction to it. That's all, you know. And I'm excited to see where you guys take it.
Does that answer your question? You can reach out to us on our Facebook page. Tactical Resiliency Training is one way to get in touch with us. Our contact information is in the back of the book. That's another way.
That's correct. And you can message us on that Tactical Resiliency. And dude, we'll shoot you our phone number. We'll talk anytime. We ain't scared. We hide in plain sight, bro. You know, we ain't scared. Now, I'm going to tell you this, we ain't never coming to Arizona in the summertime to do training. That's bullshit. Your mailboxes melt. Summertime there, man. That ain't right. Ungodly heat that goes on down there.
It was 53 degrees today. I froze my ass off.
But 114 degrees, bro? No, I'm out, man.
Hey, but we don't have that humidity. It's just that dry heat.
Yeah, it's dry.
Mike was out here. He knows what it's like.
Like Bob says, you just flames there.
You burst into flames instead of melting into a puddle. That's still you're done.
I'll take that dry heat every time.
Brother, this is Italiano. You know I love you, man. I appreciate, you know, just like Kevin earlier, we appreciate the passion for the troops and trying to do one more thing to make it better for your people. And brother, I can't tell you how much I appreciate and to show that appreciation on behalf of Fire Engineering Books and the Mikey G and Mikey D Show and these three wonderful authors. We're going to jumpstart your resiliency training in your department by sending you a free copy of the book.
Hopefully you
come to FDIC or wherever. You know what, brother, you know what would be cool? I think it would be really cool if you stayed at it and you got these boys to come out to Arizona, and let's plan on around January or February so we don't overstress Rick George too much. We'll get you out there in January or February, and then you can hear it from the horse's mouth. And I want to dovetail into what Kevin talked about, because I know he said, you know, I think very honestly He said, I'm a little bit nervous about what I get. I know these boys. I know Bob. I've watched Bob and Mike and his other buddies as they started to try to write the book. I know Rick Jordan, and I know their heart, and I guarantee you, they are going to move heaven and earth to see that you have a wonderful training experience that actually matters. And they're not going to do a thing to demoralize you, and they're not going to do a thing to tear you down. They're going to commit the lifetime of work that they have to see that you have a transformational experience. And Will, I hope you will get them out there, because I love your department. I love the passion that you guys have, and I think this is a perfect compliment. So we'll send you the book. Shoot me a Facebook message with your contact info, Kevin from Cornelius Fire. I see you're still listening. Shoot me a Facebook message with your address. And I know you already got the book because you're a badass, so you're into the craft. But here's what we'll do. We will send you a copy for you to take back to your firehouse, so they can have it in the firehouse, and maybe you'll be able to jumpstart your passion into the firehouse. Okay, brothers? We will. I appreciate it, man.
Thanks, buddy. I really appreciate it. You guys be safe. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
tell you. All those guys said hello, okay? All right, guys. Hey, you guys did an amazing job. No surprise on this end. I thank you. I love you. I'm proud of you. And I can't wait to get my own copy of the book signed by you boys. One last word for the audience, Rick. Any last word, you know, short word for them as you head on into the sunset? And then, Bob, you could do the same.
Rick?
Well, I will say one thing, because they're not talking right now. Okay, well, I will say one thing just because I want everybody to know it. Florida's gone through a couple of suicides now. Listen, brothers and sisters, if you're out there listening, if you're listening to this in audio afterwards or anything else and you're struggling, you're not alone. I'm reachable. Rick's reachable. Bob's reachable. Mike's reachable. Somebody else is always reachable. Reach out. If you're having a problem, reach out. Please, you are not alone. And don't go through it and don't have problems. I've been there. I know it's not always easy, but please realize you are not alone. Thank you.
Bobby,
go ahead.
I can't add anything to that, Mike. That's, my daughter, I heard her, my adult daughter, I heard her telling her mother-in-law something that was kind of a kick in the gut on the other end, you know, and dovetailing on what you just said there. When I said I wasn't going to be able to make it to something because I had a funeral to go to. And the mother-in-law got a little uneasy. She goes, oh, somebody you worked with? I said, yeah. And that was kind of it. And as I was walking out of the room, I heard my daughter say, Bob goes to a lot of funerals. And he knows more people that have taken their own lives than I know people who have died. That was a kick in the gut. And I want that number. I want that number not to get any bigger. I know way too many. I know all of us do. And it's one of the most painful things that I almost hate when I get a phone call from one of my buddies and they say, hey, did you hear about so-and-so? And it's like, you know what's coming. No conversation that starts that way is a good one. So, we are here. I know that you guys are sincere when you say that. I am. Rick is. We've got to be there for each other. That's all I got to say on that.
Yeah. So to tie all that together, listen, man, there's no victories without a battle. And if you're going to make yourself better, fight to make yourself better. Fight like the third monkey on the ramp of Noah's Ark and it's starting to rain. Come at it.
All right, bro. I like that. I'm going to steal that one. The third monkey on the ramp at Noah's Ark. And it's starting to rain. I like that. I got a visual, man. That's a good one. So,
it's not original. I stole it from somebody. I'd give him credit, but I don't know who it was.
That's okay. I'm going to say I stole it from a friend. That's all that you need to know.
Yeah, bro.
Well, hey, Mike, Mikey, my favorite moment of the night is resiliency training. The suck you're going to love.
All right, fellas. Listen, man, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's been an honor, as usual. I look forward to seeing you guys. Any of you guys going to be in Maryland?
Negative.
No.
Okay, good. Now I'll see you in Indy, yeah?
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely, brother.
Indy it is.
Right on. Forward to it.
All right.
Take care of yourself,
right,
man.
You
much love.
All right.
Mike and Mike,
much
really
love.
Really, thank you very much for having us. Thank you very much for having us on.
No problem.
And Mike Galliano, I'll never forget that dinner in Indy. You guys ambushed us into starting this book writing thing. And I don't know if I'll never stop thanking you or never forgive you for that. But you know, you believed in the project from the very, very beginning, and I do appreciate that. And you know, I value your friendship the top shelf, man. I really appreciate it, and thanks for having us on.
Thank you, brother.
No problem.
I'm very
Thank
proud
you.
Of you. I'm proud of all of you, and looking forward to the impact that this book has, and I think it's going to be tremendous. So, here we go. Light the torch. Light the rocket.
All right,
Is
guys.
Is there actually
thanks,
a rocket?
Man.
Okay, I'm going to sign off.
All right, take care. Michael,
All right.
thank you again, my brother. As always, it's been a pleasure. And if you've got nothing else to say, I'm going to take us home.
Thank you, Michael. God bless you, everybody. See you next time.
Okay, I just got to find our sign-out song. It's coming. Thank you all.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.